Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
From UBS, Drew Mattis joins us, their senior economist. Drew, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with just your economic framework. Where is GDP for fourth quarter and for first quarter next year?
I mean, we're not looking for much of an acceleration in the fourth quarter, and I think first quarter is going to look a lot like the second half of this year. So, we're in an environment that's actually very stable, but somewhat disappointing, and I think that's going to persist.
That's somewhat disappointing. Buttress is up against Speaker Boehner at 11:15 this morning, the president at 1 p.m. They begin to jockey over the fiscal cliff. What would you like to hear from them today?
I'd like an agreement. I'd like the fiscal cliff done and resolved.
Solved
and
by,
us.
Like, can we get it solved by 4 p.m.?
If we could get done by 1:16 after the president talks, that might help. Otherwise, I think what you're seeing in the markets is a response to now the uncertainty has really begun. What happens to dividend taxes? What happens to capital gains taxes? Rich people didn't get rich by waiting for things to happen to them. And so, when you look at the potential move in tax rates for upper income people on capital gains, I think it explains a lot of what we're seeing right now.
Well, what are you assuming in Washington? I mean, when you talk about growth next year, what are you assuming now?
We are assuming that everything gets resolved so that, President Obama wants a second term that's good. No one wants to be the president going to visit soup lines. And so, if he wants to let the fiscal cliff hit or Republicans want to let the fiscal cliff hit, it's bad news for everybody. So we expect that they'll all come together, maybe not sing kumbaya, but they'll have a happy time together and they'll pass something that gets us past this point.
When you look at the debate, the Congressional Budget Office publishing, I think it was yesterday, their mix, and what they essentially say in a summary, folks, is we need two-thirds spending focus and one-third tax focus. That is the debate here, the allocation of the pain, isn't it?
It is. I would actually disagree with that, though. I think if you look at the numbers, we are bringing in the same amount of money we brought in 2005, which was a pretty darn good year for tax revenues. We're spending $1 trillion more. That's the problem. I mean, for me, it's entirely about the spending side. Where's the money going? And that's despite the fact that the war in Iraq has ended.
Okay, let's repeat this again. That was a lot of math for radio. We are doing the tax receipts incoming.
Yes.
As of 6-7 years ago.
Yes. But that was a good year for revenues, right? It was a good economy. Everyone was happy back then. I think we all kind of remember that as a joyous time, especially relative to what we're in now. But we're spending $1 trillion more despite the end of the war in Iraq. So the question is, where's that money going? And I think that, the issue is for a lot of people that a lot of high net worth people I talk to, which is they don't mind paying more in taxes. So they're okay with the tax side of the story. They just want to make sure it's not going so that their neighbor can afford a Range Rover, right? Or that people get debt forgiven that they shouldn't have taken out in the first place. They don't want to subsidize other people's living. They want to subsidize government.
40% of that spending is Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
That's true. And that is beginning to accelerate as the population ages and people move into retirement. But when you really look at the main drivers, I mean, the stimulus was a drive. First, we had TARP, and that boosted the budget by $700 billion. Then we had stimulus. That was $700 billion. And somehow that $700 billion just got locked into the budget going forward.
I'm shocked. That's a pretty
somehow,
exclusive.
Right?
You give government $700 billion, they'll find something to do with it.
Right. Drew, when you look at all this and you look at the timeline, why are yields so low if we have so much angst about a cliff? Is it all due to Chairman Bernanke?
A lot of it's due to Chairman Bernanke. Simply put, there is not a lot of fixed income. It sounds odd, but one of the things we hear about a lot is an asset shortage. So you have $30 trillion worth of debt or so. You have 3% payout on that debt. You're generating effectively $1 trillion in extra cash that has to be reinvested every year, and we're not generating $1 trillion net in new debt every year. So that money then has to find somewhere else to go.
There's not enough debt? Is that what
there's
you're
not enough debt for the people
for reinvestment.
Yeah. That's what my rate strategist, Chris Ahrens, that's his one of his bailiwicks.
And within that, it leads me to instability. Instead of smooth curves or what people call trajectories or glide paths, where you end up is that process continues until a so-called jump condition where it abruptly changes.
Exactly. And that's something that's probably worth worrying about. If you have anything that calls into question U.S. credibility with paying back the debt, that's something we have to think about.
Drew, why should I care about the import price index?
Well, I mean, if it's not all energy related, you have to wonder why we're seeing any inflation at all, right? The dollar's been doing okay versus the euro we've been holding in. You know, if we're seeing dollar weakness, then there's a problem there. You know, we don't typically think of seeing inflation coming from the currency. And if we see it in the United States, right, it's something unusual. The Fed will be slow to recognize. And so we have to keep an eye on it because no one else is looking at it.
Let me go to the confidence numbers. We see the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index, which I know you like for its high frequency sense. University of Michigan confidence today. This is a less confident America. Did you see that in the election returns?
I haven't seen it yet, but I think we've seen it in the equity market since. So there is concern that, you know, the deal's not going to get done, that we're right back where we started from. I mean, we spent $1 billion and we have exactly what we had before the election. So we should really think about that a little bit. As an aside, though, you seem pretty popular, Tom. I think that was the youngest fan I've ever seen for a radio host in my life.
We are here at our Regency, and a shout-out, a lovely five-year-old just came up, listens every day.
The demographics of the Power Breakfast keep coming down.
They do come down, but we do have children that are forced to listen in cars worldwide. We send out our sympathies today to them as their parents give them cruel an unusual punishment.
Well, she told me my unemployment forecast was wrong, though. I thought that was a little aggressive.
University of Michigan comes out at 9:55 Wall Street time, Drew, and our survey says it's going to bump up against 83.
I think that's right. We should see an increase. I mean, you know, to plug you guys, you know, the Bloomberg Comfort Index is moving up. The University of Michigan should move up with it. Those should be moving in tandem. And you know, what we'll look for is the breakdown between Democrats and Republicans and how confident they are.
When does the Fed become confident? If we have a trajectory of better and lower unemployment, it's a fascinating idea as they approach the point of Evans or the point of Kota or the point of Rosengren. I mean, the distance from here to there is going to be interesting.
Well, it is, you know, especially because some of them have said, well, we should keep easing until we're in the low sevens. Well, we're getting there pretty fast. So, you know, the question is then, you know, do they then re-ratchet down the expectation? Now, I mean, at UBS, we've argued that the natural rate could be seven, right? So in many ways, I think those comments, even from the most dovish members, perhaps suggest that, you know, deep within the Fed, maybe not the 10-year-long natural rate, but maybe the 2-year-long natural rate, there is an expectation that maybe 7 is the best we can do.
So what do we hear from them in December? It's, what, 11th and 12th, I think?
What we think you'll hear from them is QE4, the replacement for TWIST. So there will be a Treasury buying program to match the mortgage buying program. The only impact it'll really have is that there'll be an additional $40 billion of balance sheet expansion every month. Because it's replacing TWIST. And the reason TWIST has to be replaced is because they've run out of things to sell.
Well, that was my question. We've done this before. There's, I think, a consensus view that one was better than two, was better than three. How effective is QE4?
It's not, but the alternative is a tightening because they will own then a smaller percentage of the Treasury supply going forward. So every month that goes by where the Treasury issues debt, the Fed's got to take down a certain percentage of that where they basically are pedaling backwards, so to speak. And so they're locked into this perpetual easing cycle. But QE3 and QE4 should be where the numbers end because you have as much mortgages as you can buy. You have as much Treasuries as you can buy. You've hit the legal limits in terms of the types of debt they can buy. And so we have to move forward from here.
Housing. We haven't talked about housing yet. There's, again, a pickup, but off an incredibly low base. You and Maury Harris nailed this. You've been looking for the pickup. Is it sustainable?
We think it is. Now, is the home price pickup sustainable? That I think it is not. It'll go up. It'll go up more slowly, though. Every time it seems like it's going to get some wind under it, I expect that banks will then release some of the properties they've foreclosed on into the market. So there is a little bit of a, you know, supply meeting demand story. And what that'll lead to is, substandard price gains relative to history. But we are in an upswing there. And more importantly, on the activity side, we're picking up.
You look, Drew, at the power of immigration and nominal nominal GDP. Do we have enough population growth to keep nominal going?
We should. You know, I mean, I think, though, it's important to bear in mind that although economists do look at nominal GDP, it's not for the reason most people expect. If you think about nominal GDP and you think about anything you do, For example, you know, here at Lowe's with the breakfast, if you sell the breakfast and it costs twice as much, it still is the same number of people preparing it. So nominal GDP does not drive things like labor market activity. It doesn't drive a lot of the things that we're worried about as a country. So, you know, I understand that we're worried about nominal GDP because we don't want to be Japan. But at the same point, we need real growth. It can't just be nominal.
A headline coming in right now, our Lindsay Fortado reporting, United Kingdom, not United States, United Kingdom prosecutors are poised to arrest former traders and rate setters. This is a series of banks, including UBS, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Barclays PLC. These arrests within a month. This is reported by Bloomberg News, again, out of the United Kingdom, and this is furtherance of the LIBOR probe. So that just out on Bloomberg. See that at Bloomberg.com.
Drew, what's ahead for 10-year treasuries here? We've seen them early this morning drop below 1.6 down to 1.59 actually right now. So what should we look for in the months ahead?
Well, I mean, I think as the economy recovers, 10-year yields will begin to react more normally. Right now, I think they're obviously reacting to the equity market movements. And, you know, how long that'll go on is anyone's guess. But my guess is that post-election, there's a first-mover advantage to basically taking your capital gains and running, getting out of, you know, the dividend-yielding stocks that you've been in that are now going to be taxed significantly higher. If you even want to stay in them, it might make sense to actually sell them and then buy them back 30 days later and avoid the wash sale rule. There's a lot of moving parts around this election and how wealthy people responded to the dividend tax cuts during the Bush administration and how they'll respond if they think they're going away now.
Drew, I go back to a phrase by Sir John Templeton, which I heard when I could barely shave. This was a few years ago, folks. And he talked about a shortage of shares of the equity market. And he had that Tennessee accent. Do we have a shortage of bonds now in the sovereign 10-year space?
I think we have a shortage of financial assets.
And I agree.
That's probably heresy post-crisis because we had so many financial assets we didn't know what to do with them all. But I do think if you look at the equity market and you look at shares outstanding, you know, 10 years ago when I was working at a hedge fund, we looked at it and we were surprised to see that every year the equity market got smaller. And I suspect that that has only continued over time. And now if you think about how people invest, do they invest in single stocks or do they invest in ETFs? You know, how are people actually responding to the changes? And what does that really mean for the amount of supply outstanding? You know, if people want to get into commodities, a lot of them look to ETFs. They look towards companies instead of to the products themselves. And so we're straining for these new asset classes that don't really exist. Right?
Are we straining for them to make profits on Wall Street? I mean, I don't want to get you in trouble here with your bosses, but we're straining for not synthetic instruments, but new marketing concepts away from the actual thing.
Well, I'll say this. You know, it's not Wall Street driving this. It's investors driving this, right? I mean, when we talk about a shortage of assets, you know, Wall Street's just taking the money they're getting in and saying, where do we put it? And so it really is the investors who are looking for things to put their money in. And, of course, with, you know, what we talked about with bonds, talked about the equity market, you know, we always need to find something new.
Drew Mattis, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Drew.
A terrific perspective. Great to have you here for a long, long time.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.